So good morning, everybody. Lovely to see you all. And yeah, we've had to, there's been a little bit of a technical thing, which I think is entirely human incompetence on my part. I think we actually have all the kit we need, but I just can't quite get it working this morning. Anyway, so I'm slightly looking down again, but that doesn't really matter, does it? You can get the gist. Okay, so on my this is quite funny. On my notes, I was going to say something about day three. So day three is a phenomenon that is quite common on retreats where the rubber hits the road, as it were, and dukkha arises. And we're moving on to Vedana today, so it's that is the work as well, the, you know, just learning how to, if you've got unpleasant stuff, how can you just let it be without adding to it? So I've had great opportunities this morning. I've arrived here feeling slightly flustered, and I realise I have not combed my hair this morning. So I'm just drawing your attention to that. And I've also got hat hair, which is never a good look because the heating's not been working today. So I've been going around, we've all been going around in hats and puffer jackets, and I got over here and took my hat off, and this is what it looks like, which is not good. I'm realising.
Beautiful.
That we are going poor from such things. And great gratitude to the Tara local community who have fixed the heating, which has just come on. So. But so interesting, isn't it? You know, it's day three, I was thinking, yeah, feeling a bit dukkha-ish, that's normal. And then the universe has provided lots of opportunities this morning. And also just managing my body this morning has been unusually complicated. So I could actually just go into a corner and curl up and cry quite happily. But I'm here, so please rejoice greatly that I'm here at all.
We do.
Oh, and I'm just going to do my best, but bear with me. Yeah, so resistance may be showing up. And I think what happens is, you know, we've been dropping into ourselves the last couple of days, and the process has been very sort of, it's been quite carefully structured, and you know, the invitation to drop in, I hope has been, I hope you've felt guided in safely and gently, this yielding, releasing. And then of course what happens is, you know, stuff may be coming up, as we say, because we have all our bracing for a reason, often to try to, we don't want to feel certain things, and as we begin to let go and soften more, we may start feeling things that are a little bit more unpleasant. So if that's happening for you, it's completely normal, and hopefully today you'll get some skills about how to work with that, and I will be assiduously practicing them myself. I also think, you know, you may be having a little bit of resistance emerging in terms of the just being here, or fatigue. I heard from some of the team here, leading groups, and I gather that people are, or were yesterday, feeling quite tired, some people, and that's totally, totally normal. Because another really good image, actually, I love this image, I can't remember where I heard this, is that we're a bit like a goods train. Our lives are like a goods train, hurtling along the tracks. So we've got our head at the front, and then we've got all our sort of unassimilated stuff and all the carriages behind us. And as long as we keep at a fast clip, that can all just stay there quite happily. So, you know, we're going like this, and we just don't have to feel some of that stuff because we're running away from it. And then we go on retreat, and it's a little bit like we slam on the brakes. And if you imagine a goods train, if the engine stops, all the other carriages just kind of concertina into the back. I mean, they don't derail, hopefully, but they shunt one into the other. And it can really feel like that. You know, we come on retreat and we stop, and then all this unassimilated experience. It can be like all these characters of the goods train. So I find that a very helpful image as well, and it can remind me, you know, when I'm, like this morning, I've definitely felt more in touch with my processes, you know, that I'm cold, body not working. I'm more in touch with what that feels like because I'm here. I'm not just distracting myself as much as usual. And there's huge, we do this because there's such deep learning. If we can learn to be with experience as it arises, then that therein lies the doorway to freedom. Yeah. And the other thing, of course, is we are now nearly 2 years into a global pandemic. And the sense that I'm getting is that we're all sick of it. I don't want to, you know, tell you what your experience is, but that people I talk to, things I read in the media, certainly in the UK, it seems like collectively we're just pretending it's all gone away to some extent, because we just don't want it anymore. We can't cope with it anymore. And who knows what the consequences of that will be. You know, maybe we'll get away with collective amnesia, or it might be that it comes back to bite us again a few months down the line. We just don't know, but we're living through these times that have been very testing. And I also think when we're coming out of something, that's when it hits us more. Like when we're just dealing with, it's a big deal, and we've all got to, you know, stay at home and, you know, not meet our friends, and we can sort of, that's very, very demanding. But I think as humans, we can rise to a crisis, and then when the crisis seems to be abating, that's when all the fatigue and anxiety and so on can emerge. So again, you know, some of you may be feeling that kind of thing. Just fatigue, pandemic fatigue. And then the other thing we're doing, of course, on in our Dharma practice is we're touching into reality. We're touching into the truth. And T.S. Eliot famously said that humankind cannot bear too much reality. So sometimes, I know I experience this in my own practice, that there's a kind of resistance that emerges when I'm getting a bit closer to unraveling all these kind of knots of my own making. And that can seem perverse, because coming closer, there is a sense of freedom and liberation emerging, but then it's like, oh, I just want to distract myself. You know, I sort of can't stay with that. So again, that's very, very normal. Yeah. Okay, so moving on. We're moving on to Vedana today, which is the second Satipatthana, the second foundation. And I'm also going to try to touch a bit in today into what I mean by awareness, because I'm using the word awareness quite a lot. And there's been a question that somebody's asked, what do I mean by awareness? Which I must say I found a very challenging question. This morning I've been thinking, you know, going around with my hat on and my coat on and my body not working, thinking, what do I mean by awareness? What do I mean by awareness? It's a big question, and very interesting, because awareness, I think, is, you know, both the process of attending. We have this ability to attend to our experience. And in the Satipatthana, there's this word anupasati, which is anu and pasati, which means to look at, to contemplate and observe. So we're definitely cultivating that, the ability to look at, to contemplate and observe our own experience. So that's definitely an aspect of awareness. So when I use awareness, you know, becoming aware of your body, becoming aware of Vedana, I'm meaning this ability that we have to turn our own experience into an object and then to be aware of it. You know, that's a remarkable capacity that we have as humans. And then I'm also encouraging us to be aware of awareness itself. So that's very mysterious, isn't it? And I'll be talking more about that in the Lojong section today. And then I think a very interesting question emerges, and I don't have the answer to this, but you could all reflect on it. Are those two things different? you know, the process of observation and then the experience of resting in this capacity of the aware mind, are they different? So being aware of awareness sounds like they're slightly different things, but I'm wondering whether ultimately they're the same thing. So there's the kind of training aspect, and then there's the resting in this capacity of an awake mind. Anyway, I'll say more. I'll try and come back to that because I think it's very interesting. But it's a great question. I also think it's interesting that the Buddha didn't really go into metaphysics too much. He was a very pragmatic teacher. So another way of, rather than getting caught up in the technicality of, what do I actually mean by awareness? There's the experience. We all know the experience of knowing. We all know the experience of, I'm aware of my thoughts, I'm aware of my body. We all know what that feels like, and we all know what it feels like to taste some kind of quality of a bright mind, bright awareness. And maybe that's enough. Okay, so I'm just going to share my screen. Right, here we go. Now that's interesting, isn't it? dukkha, dukkha. No dukkha.
That's good. It's good here.
That was exciting. If only it was so easy to overcome dukkha by pressing a button. So, Satipatthana Vedana, the text, and how does she, in regard to feelings, abide contemplating feelings? Here, when feeling a pleasant feeling, she knows I feel a pleasant feeling. When feeling an unpleasant feeling, she knows I feel an unpleasant feeling. When feeling a neutral feeling, she knows I feel a neutral feeling. In this way, in regard to feelings, she abides contemplating feelings internally, self, externally, other people have feelings, internally and externally. She abides contemplating the nature of arising, of passing away, of both arising and passing away in feelings, the impermanent, ephemeral nature of feelings. Mindfulness that there is feeling is established in her to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and continuous mindfulness. And she abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world. So we're aware of our feelings, and I'll tell you what feelings means in a moment. We're aware of that in order to free ourselves from the automatic reactions that we normally have. So we can abide independent of being sort of tied to stimulus, and we can rest in this quality this quality of awareness itself, big mind, blue sky mind. Okay. So this word feelings, very often it's translated as feelings, which is why I've used that quote, but I think feelings is very, it's not quite the right word for what's meant by Vedana. In English, feelings covers a very broad range of experience from I feel cold, or I feel an unpleasant sensation in my foot, to I feel rage, I feel angry. And in the Satipatthana Sutta, Vedana, what's called feeling sometimes, it's much better to think of it as feeling tone, because rage, anger, desire, they belong in citta, which we're coming on to tomorrow. So citta is active, it's an emotion, and feelings is a resultant. So in terms of karma and karma vipaka, feeling is something that's arrived in the present moment, you can't do anything about it, here it is, and you have the possibility of choice in terms of how you respond to it. So it's pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. practically, I think it's closer to sensation than anything else, but it's a little bit more than sensation. It's not only the sensation, but it's this initial feeling tone of pleasant, neutral, unpleasant. So it's that very initial arising of kind of recognizing the feeling tone. And if we're not aware, we then go straight into pushing away the unpleasant and grasping after the pleasant and going round and round in circles in terms of the neutral, just sort of drifting away. And Bhante's very, very good on this. He's given us the teaching of the gap. And that the gap is the gap between stimulus and response. So you could say feelings is the stimulus, and usually we just fall into response, but we can open up a gap of awareness and then we can choose. So I often think Vedana is one of the most important things to become aware of, because it's the point of freedom. And again, Bhante calls it the point of freedom. He also calls it the battleground of the spiritual life. Yeah, because we're really having to work. We're having, in a way, we're having to work at not acting, at inhibiting our automatic impulses. And then we can release around that, and then we can open up into much more expansive states. Yeah, and just to say something else actually at this point that I've learned through doing a lot of Satipatthana retreats over the years. It's very, very useful to focus in on body and then Vedana and then Chitta and Dhammas as outlined in the sutta. But of course, our human experience is we've got everything happening all the time. And what I realized could happen over the years is people think they're not going to think until the Chitta day. Or now that we've moved on from body, we can forget about our bodies. It's more that we've got this whole kaleidoscope of experience happening all the time. But what we're doing is we're just, if you like, bringing a bit of a zoom lens into these different dimensions so we can get to know them and familiarize ourselves with them. And one of the words for meditation in the Tibetan tradition is familiarization, which I think is very, very good. You know, we're becoming familiar with this is what it's like to have a body, this is what it's like to have this initial arising of yeah, that's kind of a felt experience. And then tomorrow it will be, this is what it's like to have a full-blown emotion. This is a negative emotion, this is a positive emotion. And how can I shift the weight of my awareness from the negative to the positive, dwell there and allow it to blossom? So, but today we're going to be really tasting Vedana. So I think we'll do a little exercise now. And I'm sorry, Natalia, that because of my chaos, I haven't warned you that we'd like to have random breakout groups of three, please, in a moment. Perhaps don't include the team, yeah? So everybody apart from the team. And what I want you to do in these groups is initially decide who's going to go first, second, third, so you could each give yourselves a number, 1, 2, 3. And if you could time yourselves, that would be good, because you'll just be in your own little groups. So then the first thing that will happen is person one will say out loud anything they would describe as unpleasant Vedana, so this initial arising of unpleasant. And generally, I think it's good to look for it in the body. So it might be more of a sort of mental, it might be anxiety, but where's that in the body? This contraction in my stomach, there's tension in my jaw, unpleasant. So I'll give you an example if I was to do it now. Cold hands, unpleasant. Slight tension in my heart area, unpleasant. Cold feet, unpleasant. Slight contraction in the abdomen, unpleasant. Yeah, so in a way, you're just really dropping in and saying, oh, what's presenting itself to awareness that I would label unpleasant. So the first person will do that for 1 minute, roughly. So maybe one of you could take on being the timekeeper. Then the second person will label the unpleasant for 1 minute, and then a third person will label the unpleasant for 1 minute, okay? Then we'll do the same thing with the pleasant. So if I was doing the pleasant, it would be warm shoulders, pleasant. Softness in the jaw, pleasant. Soft forehead, pleasant. Warm knees, pleasant. Yeah? So do that. First person, second person, third person with the pleasant. And what I discovered then, it was very, very interesting watching my mind, because initially I was thinking, oh, there's nothing pleasant because I'm in that mood today. But then by really coming closer, oh, look, these are warm. And then warm knees, that was so surprising. I had no idea that my knees were warm and that was pleasant. But by giving myself the time, it was like, oh, yes, warm knees, pleasant. And then another round will be neutral. Now, this is very, very interesting. And this, I think there's two ways of understanding neutral Vedana. One is all the things that are just blank that we're not attending to, which makes neutral Vedana a very, very important thing to become aware of, because we're waking up our experience. And the other is that it's things that are not neither strongly pleasant or unpleasant. But really, you know, scan your whole experience from the inside, you know, not thinking about it, but come inside. And what can you kind of wake up parts of the body or parts of your experience that you're normally not interested in? So if I was doing neutral, it would be earlobes, neutral. Upper arms, neutral. Contact of feet with the floor, neutral. Little fingers, neutral. Yeah, so again, that was so interesting. It's like, oh, waking up to my little fingers, which I'm just blanking out, ignoring, not attending to. Earlobes, I mean, how interesting is that? And then you might find all sorts of things. I'm not going to tell you what you might observe, but be curious. Yeah, so you'll do that three times, then have a little bit of time to discuss amongst the three of you what you noticed. So that's 9 minutes. So maybe give the groups 12 minutes, Natalia. Yeah, and then it's going to be up to you to organize your own time. So let's open the groups now.
Okay, just a quick note for the team that you're just going to have to take yourselves back to the main room.
That's fine, yeah. So good luck, everybody. Remember to be adventurous, inbound adventurous. Is Linda in a group, Natalia? That's all right, she's gone now, it's fine.
Okay, good, yeah.
And then Anna, don't know what's happened to Anna.
Not sure, she's been allocated group, but she hasn't joined it yet, so.
Okay, that's fine. We'll just, maybe she slipped away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great. So see you in 11 minutes now, isn't it?
Yep.
Oh, no, but it's 38 minutes remaining in the, anyway, if manually.
I'll bring everybody back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could you give them a warning? Maybe when there's 5 minutes to go, just broadcast a message saying 5 minute warning.
Yeah, sure.
And then how long when the group's closed? Have they got 30 seconds or a minute before they
can go? It's usually a minute.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
That's okay.
Yeah, welcome back, those of you that are back. Let's go a few more seconds. Oh, here they come. I love this bit. It's like someone's turned on a tap.
I love
and humanity is just
coming.
Pouring in. Okay, good. So I hope you found that interesting. And you've woken up your awareness, your sensitivity. As in a way, it is all about being sensitive to experience. Okay, so I'm not going to do any sort of feedback to the big group now, but you could talk about it in your small group this afternoon. What you noticed, what was interesting. There's a few things that can happen when you do it out loud like that. You can realize that something that you find unpleasant, somebody else names as pleasant. That's very interesting. You know how these categorizations that we make are less rigid than we normally think. And they're neutral. What I generally find is when I become aware of something I initially think is neutral, I realize, oh, it is a bit unpleasant or it is a bit pleasant. And that's very interesting. But it is a bit like I'm just waking up and sensitizing myself to more and more experience. And then that means I have the ability to be more skillful in how I respond. Because we, in order to be skillful, we need to know what's happening. So awareness of Vedana is a very direct way of knowing what's happening. Okay, so what I'm going to move on to briefly now is what do we do with the unpleasant? I think the unpleasant is for many of us our sort of primary driver. That is trying to get away from the unpleasant, which determines a lot of our behavior as humans. Probably many of us are here exploring the Dharma, being Buddhists, because something in our life felt out of kilter or frank. Pain. I'm very much here because of spinal injuries. I knew that I needed to get a handle on my mind in order to help me manage my situation. So what do we do? How do we learn to attend to unpleasant Vedana in a helpful, skillful way? I think that's pretty much the crux of what is a doorway to freedom. Because normally what happens is something unpleasant arises, we're not even aware of it. It's all sort of just happening. There's dukkha. We contract against it. We shut down around it. We resist it. This is often what's taught, is that it's a resistance. That's the problem in a way, not the unpleasant experience. And then that leads to reactions. So we create, unwittingly, loads and loads and loads of extra suffering. It's very, very interesting that our automatic reactions are actually the cause of a lot of extra suffering. We don't blame ourselves. It's very normal, very habitual. But the great news is, because it's created by our own aversion, our own resistance, we can uncreate that. We can find ways to let go of that automatic habit of resistance. And there's a wonderful sutta in the Pali Canon called the Salatha Sutta, the sutta of the arrows or the darts, where the Buddha says that when we have pain, it's as if we're pierced by an arrow, which I think we can take to mean when we have unpleasant vedana. And the ordinary run-of-the-mill person, I love this, the ordinary run-of-the-mill person, which is somebody who's not enlightened, knows of no other response than to resist and resent that arrow, and then it's as if they're pierced by a second arrow, and now they have the pain of two arrows. Now, that's such a sort of glorious description of what happens. And the noble disciple of the Buddha, the enlightened one, or the people who have freed their minds, they still have the first arrow. The first arrow is something that comes with having the human form. We might be a fully enlightened Buddha being, but because we've got a body, there will still be unpleasant vedana arising. But the person who's freed their mind does not resist and resent that pain. And so they don't have the second arrow, and they only have the pain of one arrow. Yeah, very simple, beautiful teaching. So let's just look a little bit at our automatic reaction, because in a way that's all very nice to think, oh, I've got to let go of resistance and resentment, but how do we do that? Because most of us won't be doing that most of the time. Most of us will be in resistance and resentment. So what do we do with that? And something that I've observed in my own experience, and also I've taught many, many people, both in a Buddhist context, but also at Breathworks, where, you know, pain is what we're coming to grips with at Breathworks. It's a project that was developed for people living with pain and illness. So how do we deal with pain? That's, I've had tons of experience in the field, as it were, to think, oh, this is what humans do. And it seems that what we do is we fall into one of two poles. So we have the experience, we resist it, and then we either go into denial or we go into overwhelm. That seems to be what we do. We either brace, numb ourselves, pretend it's not happening, and sort of push through it, which is more the response of denial, or we collapse and we get completely, you know, the pain is everything. And we go into a state of collapse or anxiety and overwhelm. And it's very interesting in the mindfulness field, the so-called secular mindfulness field, which I don't really like this kind of, you've got secular mindfulness over here and Buddhist mindfulness here. It is the same experience. But there's a lot of very interesting work being done by the neuroscientists and so on. And there's something called trauma-sensitive mindfulness, which is a kind of new field, because many of us have what we could call trauma responses, which is really where our nervous system is activated. Our autonomic nervous system is activated into what's called arousal, fight, flight, freeze. Yeah, and many of us have, it's very normal for human beings to go into fight, flight, freeze when we feel there's a stimulus which is somehow threatening. It might be big, or it might just be lots of kind of micro stimuli. That means our nervous system gets dysregulated. Yeah, and many of us live with dysregulated nervous systems. So, but the the language which is used maps onto denial and overwhelm, and the language is your nervous system goes into hyperarousal, where it's all sort of revved up, or it goes into hypoarousal, which is where you're just shutting down and you're numbing and you're closing down. And one of the lovely models that's been developed is to identify your what's called the window of tolerance, and then to broaden your window of tolerance so that you've got much more sort of bandwidth where you're resilient, you're functioning well, you're able to think clearly, your cognition's engaged in a clear way, you haven't got brain fog, or you haven't got panicky thoughts. So I think that's very nice. And the window of tolerance model comes from someone called Dan Siegel, if you want to look it up. And the trauma sensitive mindfulness is someone called David Treleaven. I'll put those on the Padlet board. But practically speaking, if you're in hyperarousal, you're overwhelmed, or you're just completely consumed by the stimuli, the pain, what you need to do is broaden. Yeah, you need to broaden your field of awareness to let in lots of other things as well. Because as we, hopefully you experienced that little exercise, there's tons of stuff going on in the moment. I'm guessing you all found unpleasant, pleasant and neutral when you learn to attend, you kind of learn to be sensitive and curious about these different dimensions. So if all you've got is just loads of unpleasant, broaden, let in sounds, other parts of the body, you know, there's this and there's this as well with the pleasant. And if you're numb and in denial and shutting down, then you need to kind of warm it up and come closer, get more curious. What is actually happening? You know, you feel kind of cut off. Come very gently towards it. And what is actually happening? Oh, I've got unpleasant sensations in my lower back. What do they feel like? Oh, they're kind of a little bit tingly, a little bit achy. It's interesting. Is it my whole back? No, it's just my lower back. Okay, that's interesting. Breathing, how's my breathing? Oh, I've got my... Okay, just release, yield, breathe. Oh, it's interesting. Belly. Oh, how about breathing in the back of my body? Oh yeah, that's nice, breathing in the back of my body. Yield, be like bamboo. Oh yes, be like bamboo. Yeah, so you kind of play around, and by learning to identify what's happening, are you tipping into overwhelm? Oh, broaden, rest. Or are you numb and cut off? Oh, let me be really curious. And then we learn how to rest in that window of balance, window of tolerance a bit more. And that is the doorway to freedom. Yeah, and by doing that, we're just kind of learning how to release and open, release and open. And then very often there's a sense of more expansive states arising, and then we rest there. And I'll go much more into that tomorrow. Then we learn to rest there. That is the process. I think that's the process of awakening. So practically put, it's not like I'm all stuck here, and when I'm enlightened, it's all going to be amazing over there. It's this process of opening, softening, opening. Oh, you're giving these little tastes, and then you just keep doing that. And the baseline kind of state becomes more and more open. That is the practice. That is the practice. Highly practical. So to enact this, I think very often, you know, sometimes people use the language of turn towards the pain, turn towards the dukkha. And let's just imagine this is the dukkha, this hand is the dukkha. And if you use the language of turn towards the dukkha, people think it's this, you know, stare at it, or you get the octopus on the face. Yeah, so I'm turning towards my pain, but it doesn't look very particularly good, does it? Because all there is pain. So that's overwhelm, clearly. So that's not what's meant, yeah? So language is so interesting, isn't it? Turn towards the pain. And denial, of course, is this. It's not happening. I'm having my life over here. pleasant, I want pleasant, eat, 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 watch the movies. All this effort to putting or pushing this away, hugely exhausting. It's not happening, but I've got this whole part of my life that I'm numbing to. So that's not great either. So I think what we're learning to do is this. Yeah, we've got the pain. It's in our field of awareness, and there's all this as well. So we have the pain. We're not denying it. We're not overwhelmed. We have a broad field of awareness, and we're moving forward in life. Here it is, and pleasure, neutral, happiness, joy. Our pain, let's attend to that a little bit. It's calling for attention. Oh, let's go over here. Oh, look out the window, blue sky, that's nice. Yeah? So you hopefully you will remember the octopus on the face.
It's graphic.
That is not what we're meaning by turn towards the pain. So let's just do a little sit together to have a little taste of calibrating between overwhelm and denial and see what happens for you. If you're lucky enough to have no dukkha at the moment, then enjoy that. Just enjoy that. But I imagine we'll be able to find something that we would label as on the unpleasant spectrum. Got a squeaky chair again. Okay, so let's arrive and rest. Yield, soften. Bow up, in my case. If you want to take a deeper breath in and on the out breath release a little bit more, then by all means doing so. See if we can allow our awareness to slide down out of the head to fill the body. And remembering that, of course, the head is part of the body, so it's not separate, but we're just shifting the weight, if you like, or the focus of awareness into the body. Breathing in the whole body. Diaphragms open. Softening the five B's of the breath, the bottom, the bum, the belly, the back, the base of the skull, the brain. Scanning through our awareness, resting inside our awareness of the body, or resting our awareness on our embodied experience. And is there anything happening that you would label unpleasant? Or it may be that you notice contraction in your experience. Tightness, resistance, somewhere around your experience. And it might be physical pain, or it might be an emotional or mental experience. If that's the case, see if you can find its echo in the body. So we're letting it into awareness. Gently, tenderly. Let's just have a play, practice. Coming closer, softening, opening. If you start tipping into overwhelm, then broadening. What other things can you a lot of other things are happening as well. And if you're numb, cut off, a bit shut down, just edge a little bit closer. Not over-focusing, but sometimes people use the language of leaning into resistance, which I think is very good, very gently, just leaning in, softening, yielding, releasing. And if it all gets a bit much, we broaden again. It's quite a sensitive, delicate process, but we're learning such an important skill. We're not going to be able to release the mind if we're closing down around any part of our experience. We need to bring everything with us. It can be a kind of exquisite, delicate sensitivity when we give ourselves permission to be with what's actually happening. Always breathing, always softening. If you notice that your nervous system's feeling agitated, aroused, come back into grounding, stability, resting, yielding. If your nervous system's feeling a bit stuck, sluggish, understimulated, then brighten your awareness. Really open the senses. Sounds, smells, the whole body. And get curious about what is actually happening in terms of this unpleasant experience. So widening what's called the window of tolerance, so area of resilience. Maybe this is the place of the warrior heart, where we're brave, courageous, willing to be present, and we're compassionate, kindly, tender towards ourselves. Now let's broaden our awareness, let go of paying particular attention to the unpleasant. Let's broaden Rest open to the kind of kaleidoscope of Vedana, all the different sensations, all the different arisings of this initial kind of almost evaluation, unpleasant, pleasant, dull, boring, neutral. It's a beautiful line in a poem by Rumi, where he says, "You are covered by thick cloud. Slide out the side. Walk out like someone suddenly born into colour." So let's see if we can do that with our own experience. It's a little bit as if all this experience is like suddenly our world becomes full of colour, rather than being a bit dull or covered by cloud, metaphorically speaking, of course. You notice you're straining and relax. If you're a bit dull and sleepy, then brighten. Maybe raise the awareness higher in the body. Breathing in vitality and brightness, breathing out, just letting go, releasing, opening. Bring a little bit of movement to the body, hands, feet. Noticing the Vedana as you begin to move. Just moving however you want to. And seeing if you can stay with the Vedana without automatically reacting through aversion or grasping or confusion, dullness. Coming into bigger movements, opening the eyes, bringing the practice to a close, but keeping, well, keep bringing the formal practice to a close, but keeping this informal practice going of all this experience of being born into colour, in terms of the kind of universe of Vedana that's happening in our experience. And taking this into a break, yeah, so just 10 minutes again, come back at 2:15. And what an adventure you have in store, which is taking all this into going to the loo, getting yourselves a drink. Take it all with you. So much is going to happen in 10 minutes. And then coming back for the next session. Thank you. Okay, welcome back, everybody. I hope you found that exciting. You have 10 minutes of really rich life, and then you know, got a sense of how you can take this quality of very sort of rich dynamic awareness with you and learning these skills of what do you do when you're tipping into overwhelm, what do you do when you're shutting down, because we're pretty much doing one or other of those things to a gross or subtle degree pretty much all the time as human. So just really, it's such a wonderful skill to learn. Okay, so we're going to move on to the mind training now, the Tibetan Lojong dimension of all this. So I'll share some slides again. Okay, so in fact, that's not. Yeah, Lojong mind training. So what we were touching on at the end of that last session is learning to notice these contracted, tight states of resistance. And we can also do it around pleasure. You know, with pleasure, we just want more of it. So again, it's that closing down quality. With neutral, it's the same thing because we're not awake. So maybe we're just kind of zoning out, we're a bit bored. That's maybe the analogy there is from that Rumi poem, being covered by thick cloud, but that's also a dulling, closing down quality. So the unenlightened states, we can think that is closing the fist, living with this tight fist. And as we were saying, maybe 2 days ago, I've completely lost track of time. There's all this closing down around breathing as well, because breathing is a naturally open experience. So the unenlightenment has been like this, and moving towards enlightenment, I think, is just learning to live with an open hand, metaphorically speaking. So experience is kind of pouring through the open hand. We're not fighting with experience, if you like. And of course, this is the mudra of generosity in Buddhism, which I think is really beautiful. So it's about like we're learning to live with a generous mind, a generous heart towards ourselves and others and life itself. So we have this abundant quality, a bit like the Chintamani. You know, we have this jewel of abundance, of we have a wealth of awareness and love, and we can just share it. We don't need to close and hold it in. So I think this metaphor, if there's one thing you remember from this retreat, you could just remember that. That's all you need to know, just that. So the first point was the preliminaries, and you're reciting those every morning, which is, I think, wonderful. So hopefully they're coming into the heart, the preciousness of human birth, death, impermanence and death is certain. Actions having consequences. We can either move towards freedom or we move towards more tightness. And suffering is inevitable. Nobody can escape at all. And suffering here, I think, means this Vedana, this unpleasant Vedana. It's completely inevitable. The Buddha, when he was an old man, he experienced a lot of physical pain, but he had a free mind. But I mean, I used to think that if I was a good Buddhist, all my physical pain would go away. And then, of course, it didn't go away. And I thought, oh, no, I'm not practicing right. And I'd be even more willful. And so it was very significant for me when I understood, oh, there's a difference between this unpleasant Vedana that's inevitable and then how I react, which is proper suffering that I can learn to free myself of. Okay, so I want to touch on the second point mainly today, which is called the main practice, training in the bodhicitta's absolute and relative wisdom and compassion. So I'll go through this and I'm going to read something from Bante about the bodhicitta's. But in the text, it said stability first. So we stabilize. And what I often do if I'm doing these practices is I do 21 breaths. That's what's often put in the teaching. Stabilize by counting 21 breaths. I find that very, very helpful. And isn't that a glorious image? So for those of you who don't want to look at the screen, unable to, it's a massive big tree in a forest. surrounded by lots of other trees and at some fisheye lens or something. So it's just looks so stable. Yeah. So we can have that kind of quality. Even better to imagine that as bamboo. If I was doing this again, I'd find an image of bamboo. Oops. And then, so thanks to Sona for these images, because he spent some time doing this for me. The next one is to regard all phenomena as dreams. So that's the next slogan. Regard all phenomena as dreams. Although they may seem solid, they are passing memories. And I've got a little movie, which is very exciting. And it's a little film of dreamlike experience. There and it's not there. It's beautiful. So it's a little child, and there's this quality of presence and yet flow, process, change. It's really gorgeous. So maybe life is like that. I'm gonna play that again because it's so lovely. So very gentle. So it's we're kind of here. We're definitely here, but we're not here in the way that we normally think we are, as these kind of solid, permanent objects. And in terms of the Shunyata teachings, this is the emptiness of things. The emptiness of things. Oops. The next slogan is examine the nature of unborn awareness. Examine the nature of unborn awareness. And this is the emptiness of the individual separate mind. So we usually think, you know, here's me and I've got this completely separate mind, but we're really realizing, oh, there is no such thing as an individual separate mind as a kind of permanent autonomous entity. Yeah, there's the experience obviously of being an individual, but if you're looking for some kind of certainty in there, some autonomous entity, you will not find it. And we release into what the Tibetans call unborn awareness. And then Sona's put this additional slogan, where is it? Where is unborn awareness? That's a very good inquiry. So I just want to say something about this. In Tibetan, it's called Rigpa, and in Sanskrit, it's called Vidya, which is really lovely for me. And I think Bhante calls it intrinsic awareness. Intrinsic awareness. So it's this kind of pure experience when we're not imposing contraction upon our experience. So it's not separate. It's not like we go from this kind of cluttered place to some other place, which is all lovely like heaven. I think it's more that it's right here, right now, but normally we're imposing upon it with our habits, our habitual ways of being, and we're ending up with very tight quality of mind. So it's releasing into something that is already here, but it's not a thing. This is very, very important in Buddhism, that the Buddha was very clear that we can't reify it into God or a state. It's not a permanent state. It's more this, well, I don't really know what it is, of course, because I only get a little taste, but my sense is it's a flow of something that's got a feeling of boundlessness, like a clear blue sky, but the clear blue sky isn't a thing or a state, so it's not heaven. And Bhante talks about the enlightened state being irreversible creativity, which I really love, because that's very alive, vibrant, irreversible creativity. So it's got this kind of endless process of unfolding. So I think that's what's pointing to here. Examine the nature of this process of there being some kind of quality of boundlessness present right now, if we can release all our habitual contractions. There's somebody who's not muted, so could you just check that you're muted, all you people out there? Thank you. But maybe I'll read this little bit from Bhante now, because it's relevant. I was looking up about what does he have to say about absolute bodhicitta, and it's in the Bodhisattva Ideal book. And he says the absolute bodhicitta, which is what these verses are, is enlightenment itself. And the relative bodhicitta is the bodhicitta everlastingly in the process of gaining enlightenment. Thus, in our spiritual life, we are all the time trying to achieve what we already have. So interesting. We have to do both. Realize that we already have it, but at the same time go all out to achieve it. One without the other leaves us out of balance. So we're always striving endlessly. That can be exhausting. And if we think, oh, it's all here right now, I can just kind of flop into it, then we get a bit dull and inert. So there has to be this paradox of sort of action and release together. Very, very mysterious. It is very mysterious. So he says, you have to have a sense of racing forward all the time, moving from stage to stage, like climbing a mountain. At the same time, you have to be absolutely still, just realizing more and more deeply where you are now. So he says, we need to have the metaphor both of the unfolding of a flower. So a flower unfolds, and then the center of the flower has always been there. And we also have the metaphor of climbing a mountain. And of course, you know, you can't really get your head around that. You can't really get your head around any of this, which is good. We can't get to enlightenment through thinking and concepts, but I think we can get a sense of there's a process of ongoing practice, and then you're also just resting into what's already here. And then he says, when you come to a point outside time, as it were, you realize that you have been there all the time. So when you have gained enlightenment, you realize that you always were enlightened. It is said that some Zen masters on the attainment of enlightenment just laughed and laughed, seeing how absurd it was that they had ever imagined they were anything but enlightened. What a silly mistake. And a mistake on account of which they had suffered a great deal, completely unnecessarily. Even in ordinary life, we sometimes find that after we have worried a great deal about something, we get some new piece of information which makes us realize that we didn't need to worry after all. I can really relate to that, can you? Or you're totally in a knot, and then a few weeks later you look back and you think, what was that all about? And then Banda says, then it seems ridiculous to have been worrying so unnecessarily. The experience of enlightenment is an extreme version of that. You see what a fool you were, struggling and suffering, wrestling with imaginary problems, thinking you were this, thinking you were that, and now you can afford to laugh. What a silly Buddha you were. It's so good, isn't it? And actually something we were talking about in the team last night is the kind of fruits of practice compared to perhaps what you expected. And if I think back to when I started out on the Dharma life, if someone had said to me, well, what might it look like to have some fruits of practice after decades? And I probably would have said, well, I'll probably be a bit more serious, certainly be calmer, clearer, bit more earnest. But one of the most delightful unexpected consequences of practice for myself has been to become more light-hearted, and I absolutely love that. It's been a complete surprise. I'm not claiming anything, but I'm just saying I am more light-hearted now than I used to be, and I can laugh much more at life, even like this morning, which I could have turned into an absolute catastrophe, but there was something quite funny about it in a certain kind of way, just watching my mind getting all tangled up and thinking, oh, silly me. And it's very joyful to hold life more lightly. So I found that quote from Banta, I thought it was lovely. These Zen masters just laughing and laughing at the kind of absurdity of all our entanglements. So I think this quote, this slogan, examine the nature of unborn awareness, where is it? You could take that question with you into today, into the rest of your life. Where is it? And according to Bente, it's right here. But you have to go, you have to do something in order to find it. So mysterious. And then the next slogan is, let go of even emptiness as a concept and refuge. Yeah, so you can think, oh yes, I understand emptiness. And then put, and these slogans, it's like, no, you don't. Let go of even that as a concept and refuge. Even emptiness is empty. And then Sona's added in the goal. The going is the goal. Now, this is a very profound teaching that he got. I think he was about 19. He had a visitation from a being, a sort of Kuan Yin type figure that he had dialogue with about, where am I going? Where am I going? And this figure said, forget about that. It's the going that's the goal. It's the going that's important. And this can bring enormous confidence, because rather than worrying about, you know, where am I going? It's like, well, right now, you know, am I experiencing a bit more mindfulness? Am I experiencing a bit more love? That's it. That's it. That's all we need to know. And we can have huge confidence in that, because then it's a way of overcoming doubt as well, doubt in the past. Just think, well, what is present right now? And the way I look at it as well is, you're on a journey and there's a horizon, and you just keep moving towards the horizon. And of course, the horizon just keeps on moving as well. So it's this endless process of just going out into this great sort of sea of mystery, and the sky, big sea of mystery. And you think you're going to eventually get to the horizon, and then hurrah, you can put your feet up and you've reached heaven. But it's more, oh, it's this process of sailing across this ocean with this ever receding horizon, and just what was on the horizon, now it's here. You know, what seemed far away, now it's here. Wow, okay, look at the water. It's all still and beautiful. And now this water's a bit turbulent. Ah, look, there's something more. So there's just more and more that for us to unfold. So the going is the goal. I love that. And then the fourth slogan for the Absolute Bodhicitta is, rest in the nature of all, the basis of everything. It's a little typo there. It should be, rest in the nature of all, the basis of everything. And in that poetic version of the 7-point mind training I've given you, this is just said as, rest in the light, which I find absolutely glorious. Rest in the light. And by light, I think it's when we are fully aware, full of love. It is a kind of luminous quality, because there's nothing left in the shadow, because we're awake to everything. Rest in the light. So I think we can, in terms of Bante's teachings, this is also the Dharma Niyama processes. We're resting in the flow of these processes that are an expression of freedom, an expression of this quality that's free of contraction, free of closing down, free of grasping. Then we have, remember all this between meditations. And here's a picture of some feet, somebody walking, very cool shoes. Remember all this between meditations. So the teaching is, don't just do it on the cushion. How foolish would that be? Rest in the light all the time. Be a child of illusion is another way. This is sometimes described as, between meditations, be a child of illusion, which is quite glorious as well. But the main thing is, just take it into your whole life. It's not just something you touch into a meditation. And then we come on to the relative bodhicitta teachings, which is the Bante's talking about it as the action, you know, the climbing the mountain. It's the compassion aspect. It's like, in the world, how do you bring this into the world for the sake of all beings? And we've got the train and taking and sending alternately. So we're turning towards life and we're receiving awareness of other people and their suffering, and we're cultivating compassion and we're giving loving kindness. So it's a practice in cultivating compassion and loving kindness. Yeah. And at the end of this morning, we're going to recite the transference of merit and self-surrender together, because that's such a great verse for this process of just give it all away. Give it all away for the sake of all beings. So we're willing to turn towards and to open to the pain of the unenlightened state in all beings. And we just give, loving kindness. And that process of giving is a way of us opening our hearts up to this this absolute bodhicitta state, this state of openness, this state of freedom. Yeah. And then we link giving and receiving with the in and the out breath. So this is the Tonglen practice, where we breathe in awareness of others. And today we're going to do it in particular the way they all close around experience. We're not the only ones that are doing this. Everyone's doing this, and it leads to so much suffering and distress. You breathe that in with compassion and you breathe out loving kindness. And there's an image here of a child, just beautiful face, breathing. Yeah. And I think, I don't know who invented Tonglen, but it is absolute genius, because it's overcoming this tendency to turn away from pain, which is what we touched on earlier, by turning towards, and the breathing in, you have to really face something to breathe in. I mean, this is all a little bit complicated in the times of COVID, but let's just put that to one side if we can, you know, where it is safe to breathe in. Imagine, we can imagine that. So by breathing in, you are really fully present. You can't breathe in and turn away from something. Because if you turn away, you're not breathing that thing and you're breathing something else in. So whoever developed this, absolute genius. So you breathe it in, and then the out breath, oh, I give you everything. I give you, I'm breathing out all of my blessings. I'm breathing out all of my good wishes for you. And we're going to do this in a moment. And then the next verse is three objects, three poisons, three roots of virtue. So and this ties in with Vedana very, very well. So the three objects are pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. The poisons are our automatic reactions of unpleasant, aversion, pleasant, craving, neutral, ignorance, and indifference. And the roots of virtue are cultivating the opposite. So where we have greed, pleasant greed, we cultivate contentment. Where we have unpleasant aversion, we cultivate love. And where we have neutral indifference, we cultivate wisdom. So you're using everything. This is the thing about the mind training, you use all of your experience. So here's unpleasant, let me cultivate love. Here's greed, let me cultivate generosity, contentment. Here's ignorance, indifference, let me cultivate wisdom, let me wake up, let me brighten my awareness and see what's actually happening and bring about wisdom. And there's an image here, I think this is from Thailand, of a Buddha's head. It's amazing, isn't it? Over time, it's a Buddhist rupa that's obviously a place that's been overtaken by the jungle. So the Buddha's head is in cased by the roots. Very good image for this transfer, just transforming the poisons into virtues. And then the final slogan is, in all activities, train with slogans and remember in words. And the idea here is that you have things you've memorized that you just bring into your daily life to remind you of the Dharma. And these are two little slogans that I've developed for myself that really mean a lot to me. So one of them is, whatever you experience, think of others, or whatever I experience, think of others. And what I mean by that is, if I'm experiencing, well, like this morning when I had quite a lot of sort of body dukkha, I can either close down around and think, oh no, this is terrible, poor me, which I did a little bit, Or you can think, oh, I'm experiencing this. Lots and lots of other people in the world are experiencing this because I know what it's like. I know what it's like for you, because I know what it's like to bring understanding and tenderness to this in me. I can offer that to you. Yeah. So all the time, universal, you're using your own experience as a touch pad for universalizing that. So the purpose of your awareness becomes to really deeply empathize with the human condition. So that's one slogan that I use. And the other one is take life seriously, hold it lightly. And that's been my pandemic slogan. So that's been what I've been really moved by. It just sort of came to me, and I've used it as my sort of touchstone. Take life seriously. There's a very, very serious thing going on, loads and loads of suffering. Hold it lightly. Don't get kind of bogged down in it. Hold it lightly so that I can maintain perspective and be more useful to the world. And I really love that. It's very paradoxical, isn't it? To be kind of serious and light at the same time. But I do believe that's one of the doorways to freedom. Okay, so let's do a practice now of this. And we're going to begin to open to suffering of others in exactly the same way that we did it towards ourselves, finding this middle way between overwhelm and denial. We'll do some breathing in and breathing out. And traditionally, there's also the sort of imagery, if you like, of you're breathing in smoky light and you're breathing out moonlight. You can include that if you like, it's not essential. And I'm going to invite us to really become aware of the Chintamani in the heart at the start of the practice, which is where we're remembering. It's not, in a way, it's not you, this little small you that's doing this transformation. It's you touching into this bigger field of awareness, this loving field of awareness. So the bodhicitta at the heart. Yeah. So let's begin. Let's find our position, settle into our posture. I'm just wondering, team, could someone get my power lead? Because I might run out of juice. Okay, good. Wouldn't it be good if life was like that? You just need to plug yourself in and get powered up. Okay, so yeah, let's just drop back in with ourselves. Body resting, yielding onto the floor, into the floor. Rooted, present. Bringing everything into our awareness, leaving nothing out. With this quality of tenderness, kindness, receptivity, sensitivity. We've got dukkha present, unpleasant vedana, pleasant contraction, tightness, aversion. Let's just let that into our awareness, not staring it out, not falling into the octopus. Including it in our internal experience very gently and leaning into the resistance. Now, including an awareness of this kind of glorious wish fulfilling jewel at the heart, Chintamani. Let's experience it as an encapsulation of absolute bodhicitta, of big, blue, open, vast, boundless, luminous awareness. Awareness itself, that's not a state, it's not a place, it's not static, it's mysterious. Seeing how we can tune into that, it might be a feeling in the body, some kind of openness, maybe a colour, maybe some words, maybe an image. As Bhante said so evocatively in that quote, we let go of being caught up in time and space as kind of working models. There's something infinite outside of time, right here, right now, in our experience. We're enlightened right here, right now. Effortless, present. First of all, let's just remain open to our own dukkha, our unpleasant Vedana, and any habits of contraction that might be present. Sort of natural human responses. But it leads to more suffering. And let's imagine that we breathe that into the Chintamani in the heart, or this felt quality of openness. We breathe it in and maybe we see it as smoky light. It gets transformed and we breathe out moonlight. We bathe this contraction, this tightness, this resistance. We bathe that in moonlight and radiance and love. Release. Now bringing to mind a friend, inviting them into our field of awareness. So they're just resting in our presence and we are giving them the gift of our presence, our attention, a genuine interest in their experience as a fellow human. We can be absolutely certain that they will also have a whole kaleidoscope of Vedana pouring through the moment. You'll have habits of pushing away the unpleasant, or falling headfirst into the unpleasant, chasing after the pleasant, blanking out, being bored, uninterested. And all these reactions are like a closing down response to life, like a tight fist. And I'll have loads of extra suffering because of this. It's inevitable. Let's breathe that into the heart. Breathe that into the Chintamani, however that's expressing itself for you inside your experience. It's a little bit like it's an alchemical, magical experience where the smoky light of their suffering gets transformed, blazes up and becomes moonlight, bright light that we breathe out and it pours into them and takes away their suffering, their reactive suffering. Breathing in compassion, breathing out metta. Be careful not to force or strain or overbreathe. Staying with a natural breath. But we're including this intention, this attitude, this outlook, this view. Opening to their human experience with all the suffering that comes with that, and breathing out. Ah, may you be well, may you be free of that suffering. May you know luminous, radiant, boundless awareness in your own way. Now let's broaden to include everybody here, 69 of us at the moment. We may be not physically present, but let's just allow the possibility that even physical separation is a kind of illusion, and that we are completely present in this timeless, boundless space of absolute bodhicitta. Resting in the nature of all, the basis of everything together. Resting in the light together. Breathing in compassion towards our suffering caused by our unwittingly ignorant reactions to life, and breathing out, oh, may we all be free of that. May we all rest in the light. May we all know that we are already resting in the light. If at any point you get overwhelmed, then just relax back a bit, release, soften, broaden. If you're finding it a bit dull, you're a bit shut down, and seeing if you can get a bit more curious, maybe picking out one or two people, really imaginatively empathizing with them. Not letting go of any effort whatsoever, and just sitting, just lying if you're lying down, resting, yielding, absorbing, settling, being, breathing. Now bring a little bit of movement into the body. Noticing any habits of automatically gripping around the mind, the heart, the body. Seeing if we can keep it open and fluid. Open to ourselves, open to others, open to the world, open to some big mind, big awareness. Bringing the formal practice to a close, moving however we want to. Good. A little bit of homework. I thought what would be really lovely is if we compile a kind of almost like a retreat poem of what would be your slogan? You know, like mine is take life seriously, hold it lightly. Another one, whatever I experience, think of others, or whatever you experience, think of others. What would be yours? You know, a one-liner that is your kind of Dharma, kind of pointing out instruction in a way. You know, what could you bring into your life that will remind you of what you're about? You know, you are both an unfolding flower and you're also climbing a mountain. That's so interesting. Yeah. And then on the Padlet, I was thinking we could just have all those there. I don't know if people are using the Padlet, but there's quite a lot of stuff on there now. I have said don't do study during the retreat, which I still really hold by. But, you know, the PowerPoints are there if you just want to refer back to anything. And there's a few poems and things like that. I don't actually know if we can do a collective posting on Padlet. Do you know Taraloka person, Natalia?
I'm not actually sure. I can find out and get back to you this afternoon.
Yeah, it might be that I could start something and then everyone else can edit it and just put your thing in. Oh, comment, you can. Yes, so I could start something and you can all comment on it and we'll just have all these comments under it. That would be good. And then that'd be so lovely, wouldn't it? And then at some point I can read those all out. Yeah, good. And of course your homework as well is to stay in touch with this quality of just really sort of opening to everything and seeing if we can let go of the tight fist and stay with the Vedana, let it flow through the moments without automatically reacting. And there is the point of freedom, as Bhante said. So I hope you have a good time. I'm not even going to call it a break because it's not a break from practice, but I hope you have a good period of informal practice. Come back at 3:30 and we'll do a longer Tonglen practice together, very similar to what we just did. And then groups at 4:30. Thanks, everybody.